Blog Talk Radio.
Another segment of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hunt, your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, we ask you to please click, tag, and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're talking to concerned citizens of Fort Worth, those who have been concerned enough to actually go downtown and speak before our city council with issues they had about things that are going on in our city. Many have spoken about the citizen presentation and the way it's handled and how it should be at the top of the agenda. Others have talked about developers and the fact that they seem to have more weight in what they want done than what the citizens want. Others have talked about police harassment and police brutality, the Tatiana Jefferson trial, the traffic congestion around 7th Street, and so much more. Are the voices of the people being heard? That's what we're talking about tonight. We know we have new leadership downtown. In District 8, we have Chris Nettles. District 9, Elizabeth Beck. District 7, Firestone. District 3, Michael Crane. District 6, Jared Williams. And we know we have a new mayor. With new leadership, you expect a degree of change. We were hoping that the new leadership would put the people first and also address the concerns of the citizens. So tonight, we're not cutting anyone off. And we're saying to downtown, can you hear us now? Do we have to resort to going on talk shows in order for our questions and concerns to be heard? That said, let me tell you who I have on the panel tonight. First of all, we have retired attorney Jackie Cox. On the August 3rd city council session, she was the person that they had so much trouble getting connected on the phone lines. She talked about an issue with annexation. There was also at city council that night Thomas Torlinkazi. He was the one that went down and said, are you ready to rumble? And he also began to tell them how he had spoken on many platforms. However, he never felt as intimidated on any other platform as he did speaking before council. And we also had Kenneth Bowens with us tonight, Bowens. And Mr. Bowens was the one that went before council on the 3rd of August and said, let's move this Tatiana Jefferson trial forward. What are we waiting on? So tonight we're going to hear from them. Also, we're going to hear what they didn't get a chance to say because most cases you only have 3 minutes unless you were like Thomas and had 10 people with you, and he still only got 3 minutes. So let me open their phone lines now. I see on the phone line Kenneth Bowens, Jackie Cox, and I see Mr. Torlinkazi. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm having some trouble. Give me 1 second. For some reason, opening the phone lines of, okay. I'm not sure what's going on, but I'm having trouble opening the phone lines of Kenneth and Mrs. Cox. Mr. Torlinkazi, as I'm trying to get their phone lines open, tell us a little bit about you and why you went down to council the other night.
Well, I've been involved in Fort Worth politics on and off for a number of years. I've lived in Fort Worth, I've lived somewhere else, come back. And I've actually spoken or advocated for different issues in the city council chamber since the mid-90s probably. And so I've seen how the space and the rules and the practice has evolved. And I've been downtown a lot more often in the last 2 years because a lot more issues that are important to me and activists and friends have come to the forefront. And I started to notice as a public speaker that it became harder and harder and less welcoming for people, especially people with dissenting opinions. So I organized a group of people the other night, and it takes a while, especially during COVID, to get 14 folks to commit to coming down in order to add time on the speaking schedule. So most speakers get 3 minutes, and I had 3 minutes on, say, June 22nd. So our understanding and the paperwork we were provided said that if you bring 10 or more folks, you get 10 minutes. Well, in the middle of my 10 minutes, I noticed that I only had 3 minutes left. And so I spent a minute of my 6 minutes arguing with the mayor that we were supposed to have 10 minutes. And part of that is that's just a classic example that someone in the last couple of years has reduced the group time from 10 minutes to 6 minutes. Well, no matter what you're there to talk about, you know how ridiculous it is to add only 3 more minutes to your speaking time when in our case we had 14 citizens there? I mean, it's incredible. And that's just a very small example. It's not just the confusion over the time. It's the fact that the form that I was going by was printed in May of 1999. So when you talk about bureaucracy or clutter or too many people making the sausage, that's the perfect example right there.
But, you know, when you said that you had spoken on lots of platforms, but you had never been more intimidated by speaking before them, elaborate on that.
Well, you know, most people are terrified of public speaking, and that's one of the top two fears that humans have, no matter what their spiritual perspective. I mean, lots of people are afraid of dying, but speaking is the number two or number one fear listed by a lot of folks. Then when you put someone in a high-pressure situation or in a circumstance where they're passionate, where their lives and futures and equity and equality and all those kinds of things on the line, and you throw a bunch of extra barriers to access right there in their face, it's the toughest setting or platform you can be in. I mean, I've spoken and competed in public speaking in more than one country, honestly, and in a lot of other settings. I mean, other people have spoken to, but I have about 200 college campuses under my belt and a crowd of 40,000 at a Martin Luther King event, and nothing was as stressful or awkward for me. I can handle that, but what I was there for partly was to try to impart that as a person that's fairly accomplished, trying to get the council members to recognize how tough it must be for a young person, a person of color, a person who comes in with that third fear, which is the fear of police or government or the establishment, and that they were not creating a welcoming environment. I mean, honestly, I could go on and on about it, but the truth is that it's as if the government employees and the public servants have forgotten that they're servants. And the dynamic is that the speakers and the folks coming forward to practice their, you know, their Bill of Rights, basically, are looked at like second-class citizens, exactly the opposite of what ought to be happening.
I agree. Ms. Cox, I now have your phone line open. Good evening. Welcome to Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Can you hear me?
We can.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
You know, they had trouble opening your phone line the other night. I don't know what that's all about. But thank you for coming tonight. You actually said you had three issues that you got on the docket to speak about the other night, but you were only allowed to speak about one. Can you tell us what one of the issues that you were trying to talk about last night? Let's start off with one of the issues that you were trying to tell them the other night.
Well, I signed up to speak about three annexation issues, and one issue that had to do with a purchase that was being done without competitive bidding. It was an increase in spending for security equipment, actually it's taser equipment, for the city marshal's office, and I couldn't figure out why does the marshal's office really need this taser equipment. But they were authorized to spend up to $318,429 for a Taser 7 and related hardware. I don't know if any of you all are fans of the movies down at Movies at the Modern, but this summer there was a movie about this device, the Axon 7, which has become really popular with police officers because they point the taser at someone and a camera goes on and the camera is automatically recording only what the guy has, you know, in other words, he points the taser and the only thing in the line of vision of this camera recording is what the officer has pre-selected. So if there was something that happened before the thing came on that was threatening, one wouldn't have seen it. But at any rate, it's very popular with police officers because it allows them to frame precisely what they want and nothing else. And it makes images of people which can be digitized and then used for identifying people in future crime things. It's surveillance equipment and court evidence equipment all wrapped up into one little device. It appears from their description that this is for use in the municipal court martial division's car. I didn't know the municipal court marshals had a car. The ones I've seen are standing around when people have some kind of little misdemeanor offense. They're down there in misdemeanor court to either pay their fine or plead not guilty and get a trial date, or make arrangements to work off their fine. But it's the most unthreatening kind of situation. I just couldn't imagine why they need tasers at all. But they will be spending $318,000. And I would have commented on the fact that it seemed odd to me that they were really militarizing and kind of over-equipping guys who just stand around the office or, you know, stand around the courtroom while people wait to enter guilty pleas or whatever they're going to do. The other issues that I wanted to speak on had to do with the practices giving builders free sewer lines, sewer hookups, police service, ambulance service. If the owner of a piece of property goes to the city and says, please take me in. I'm in your extraterritorial jurisdiction. I would like to be a part of the city of Fort Worth. Never mind that I'm in Denton County. Won't you just run your sewer lines all the way out to take care of my property? And the city, if they agree, signs an agreement that indeed they will provide a rather large flotilla of services free of charge in exchange for these people having agreed to make themselves part of the expanding Imperial Fort Worth. To my astonishment, there was an article in today's Star Telegram about how much this is all supposed to cost. And I'm going to read you a paragraph out of that. It will cost $1.25 billion. This is for the coming year. Now, $1.25 billion just to provide water and wastewater systems to all new homes that are expected to be built within the city during the next decade. So what it comes down to is that if you're already in the city, they're going to provide builders with water and wastewater systems at a cost of $1.25 billion for the next decade. And these will go on our tax bills or on our water bills. There'll be a fee for the developers. The fee will cover 40% of the cost of the water hookups, and current Fort Worth residents and water customers will pay the other 60%. This is according to what the Fort Worth Water Director said during the City Council work session before the council meeting yesterday. I hadn't heard that before the meeting. My complaint at the meeting was to provide all these things free to developers who are way out, a long way from the county line. I mean, well, actually, Denton is not a long way from the Denton County line, but the Denton County line is a long way from downtown Fort Worth, and that we are running water lines all the way out there and providing free fire and police service for people. I mean, you know, this free is free. Free is 40% cheaper than what they would pay if they were in the city already, developers. I object to the fact that I have to pay a water bill that's already really high, made higher so that it will pay the costs of developers' fees for starting new housing tracts. I got into a little discussion with some friends today at lunch. Pardon me?
Well, I guess I'm confused. So if I live in East Fort Worth, nowhere near this development, what am I benefiting from this? What is my benefit?
If you live in a new development?
I'm on the other side of town and I'm nowhere near the development. What is my benefit? I mean, why do I have to pay for it? What am I getting for what I'm paying? I mean, I'm paying for this service in my water bill. So what am I getting for this? I mean, am I getting anything, or I'm just getting charged for something that I'm not going to benefit from, is my point.
Well, when I pay my water bill, I assume that there is some cost for maintaining the lines for all the city residents built into it. In other words, I assume that everybody who's part of the system would be paying his or her or pro rata share of the cost of the system. The problem is that I'm under the arrangement as I read it, I'm not just paying my pro rata share, I'm also paying 60% of the cost of running new lines out to new housing developments. So,
See,
I mean, at the end... Huh?
the problem I have with that is, you know, there was a report done recently by Truth in Accounting that said we're $2.4 billion in, you know, actually it's closer to $2.7 billion in the red. And then we're talking about taking on a bond, you know, 2022 bond package. And then you're saying adding this additional $2.5 billion, you're saying, so that this is just like a whole bunch of money that we're just kind of acting like it's monopoly money, but this cost is being passed on to the taxpayer.
Well, I don't think it's fair that the taxpayers pay more than their share of the operating costs, that I would be taxed to pay part of the cost, 60%, it sounds like, of the cost of extending lines for developers to new developments strikes me as very unfair. And there was a committee of people who decided, and here's the part that kind of goes with that I was not aware of last night when I spoke, but there's a committee of builders and developers, and there's one, like, taxpaying citizen on the committee. It's a seven-person committee. So it's 6-1 of the builder and developer community to this one little consumer. And they decided how much they would tell the city. This committee made a recommendation to the city as to how much of these water hookup fees should be charged to the developer and how much should be charged to the rest of the taxpayers. And it was they who came up with this recommendation that the split should be 60-40, 40% paid by the developers and 60% paid by the Fort Worth residents and water customers. And that's going to be up for another public hearing. This, you know, how should these fees be allocated, is supposed to be on the August 24th council meeting. Mm-hmm. A hearing on the proposed fee schedule. Fees is scheduled for August 24th. There's been, historically, they've had this split kind of thing in the fees for a long time. I guess currently, the fee, under the proposal, a fee of $2,802 for each water meter in a new development would increase to $3,290 beginning next year and $3,777 starting in 2003. And that's the thing that would be split 60-40. This is just what they're going to charge. I think it's not going to be exactly what it costs to do the installations, because we know those costs are going to go up over time. But they're setting cost, a four-year cost schedule. Anyway, I recommend all of you that we all go down there and protest on August 24th that we don't think that taxpayers should be paying the costs, or water bill payers for that matter. You know, why should somebody who's renting and just gets a water bill pay part of it? Why should people who own property and get a water bill pay twice, once on their tax bill and once on their water bill, to underwrite the cost of developers? I just,
okay, so
I don't want to do it.
What day is this happening at City Council?
Pardon me?
What day is this all happening at City Council? When is this on the docket?
Well, the article in the Star-Telegram this morning said a public hearing on the proposed fees is scheduled for August 24th. So this is
okay,
the change in fees. Already we're doing this. I was not aware. I was aware that my water bill was getting way too high.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told, oh, it's not that bad. It's just the cost of trash collection. What your income is depends on whether you find it hard or not to pay your water bill.
Gotcha.
So,
August 24th is when we all need to be at City Council about this, is what you're saying.
I guess, it's really the Friday before something is on the agenda that you know that it's on the agenda. So, you know, go speak to it. But now would be soon enough, and not too soon, to start calling your City Council person or emailing your City Council person or both, to say that if you feel this way, you know, hey, why should I, as a private resident, be paying the connection fees or part of the connection fees for developers? Just never mind. Don't do that.
I agree. We're going to come back to other issues. We're going to get to Mr. Bowen for a second here and see what he went down to council to say the other night. Good evening, Kenneth. What were you down there talking to council about the other night?
What I said to the council was, with respect to, there was a plot of industrial lands in Denton County that was being annexed into the city. And the terms of the conditions of an annexation are, a landowner says, okay, I'm going to agree that you can take me into the city of Fort Worth, and I will pay city property taxes, or whoever uses my property will pay city property taxes. In other words, a manufacturing facility will pay industrial use taxes, and a developer of a housing development will sell the houses, and the people who buy the houses will, after they buy, be paying the taxes. So the city of Fort Worth does not tell you how much they are going to spend in terms of hooking this property up. But by the time you get to Denton County, you're running your lines out some extra miles. It's not cheap to dig holes in the dirt and lay the water lines. And then they were, you know, until the thing is finished out, the plant is operational, all the cost of laying those water lines and electric lines and utility lines and fire service and police service are just sucked up by the taxpayers of the rest of the city. And then after the thing is up and running, it starts paying taxes. So the city staff person admitted up front, oh, well, the first year of this, we will probably lose some money. We don't know how much, but we figure after the end of a year, bottom line is Fort Worth will make more money than it spends. And I would call that kind of off-the-cuff computation. You know, they have some numbers that they use for estimating purposes, and I guess my best evidence of that came in today's Star Telegram article about what the city water guy told the council in a hearing yesterday about what usual charges for water fees were and how much they were charging now. And surely they know kind of how much per mile it costs them to run a mile of pipe. You know, ought to be some. Pardon?
You know what it sounds like we're going to have to do? We're going to have to get Jerry Presley from the water department to come on and explain some of this to us so we can get a better understanding.
I think that's right. Why don't you see if you can get Chris Harder to come on for the water department and explain how much does it really cost, you know? Tell us. You might send them an Open Records Act request and then ask them to come talk to you.
Tell you what,
good
we
idea.
Will do that. We're going to do that. We're going to put you on pause for just a second, Ms. Cox, and we're going to go to Mr. Bowen and find out why he went down before council the other night. Good evening, Kenneth.
Yeah, good evening. Good evening. How's it going? Can you hear me?
Fine. Yeah, we can hear you. So you went down the other night to tell city council what?
Well, I've been going to city council meetings for years. Going back to my seventh grade year in middle school, but even I started going back to city council again back in 2018, just introducing myself, promoting my business and stuff like that, and introducing myself to the committee and to the community. But I was going to city council meetings, not even speaking there, just going there, learning city council politics and different things like that. But yesterday on Tuesday, I went down there to speak on the ITM Jefferson situation, because it's going on 2 years now and nothing has been resolved. I know the city can't handle it, but I know it's a county matter with the district attorney and the judge who's overseeing the case. But I believe, like I told them, it's a black eye on the city of Fort Worth with this matter not being resolved. And it's time for the city, the police department, mayor, DA's office, judge who oversees this matter to resolve this issue. Because I never lost a family member to police brutality or police violence, but I lost family members. I know how it is to lose someone, and with this issue not being resolved, it's still a black eye on the city of Fort Worth, and it's been going on 2 years now. And this matter needs to be resolved like ASAP. No, beating around the bush.
But I'm hearing that, you know, we have to be very careful. There's a fine line that we have to walk on that particular case, because they're trying to find every reason to move it to another county. So I think everybody's kind of tiptoeing right now because they're afraid of that. So there's been a lot of pressure.
I don't tiptoe about nothing. I address the issue because I don't usually address issues like these at city council. When I speak, I always promote my brand, my sports management company, and introduce myself and stuff like that. But it has been said on me last couple of weeks, months, about this issue. They supposedly had a hearing about when the trial date was started and stuff like that, a preliminary hearing about the trial date, and it still hasn't been resolved. And just like, that's crazy. Do we have to wait another year for this issue to get resolved? Or it's crazy, the George Floyd situation didn't take a long time to get resolved, almost a year. The situation in Dallas didn't take a long time. But this matter is taking 2 years for this issue to be resolved. I'm not no community activist like that. I'm just a regular old Joe who lives in the community, been in the community for years. And it's crazy. It's still a black eye on the city when this issue not being resolved. I don't know. It's so crazy.
I think there's thousands of people in this city that feels exactly the same way. So, absolutely. I think you have a lot of support. And I think we've seen at city council meetings hundreds of people come down there voicing their concerns about that very issue. Listen, y'all, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight we're talking to concerned citizens of Fort Worth, citizens who have actually taken the time to go downtown before the city council and speak about issues that they have about things that are going on in the city. The question is, are their voices being heard? If you have a question or a comment tonight, call in at 516-387-1981 and then press 1. Again, that number is 516-387-1981 and then press 1. We're going to go to the phone lines for a second, y'all. We're going to pick up 682-716. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Fine. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Okay. We can.
Hello. Okay, good. Hi, my name is Becky Rochelle Delosiewicz. I'm an activist in Fort Worth. Went to mm-hmm. University of North Texas and studied civil rights and went to teach history, English, and social science. So my story basically begins about over four years ago when Trump was elected. I think like a lot of people, we were all just kind of floored. And as a historian, I saw a lot of patterns that I think everybody can see now as there's been a lot of ahas since 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. So going back 4 years ago is very hard because I was attacked by the Tarrant County Police and they used CPS and kidnapped my children. So I could not come to the council meeting because I am who the first speaker on this program said, who is afraid a little bit, you know, but I do have PTSD support groups, and I have great therapists for my sons. I was held in voluntarily. I was taken in for, I think like a lot of families, there's been kind of stress between families during this. I know there's been senators who even have been ostracized from families because they chose a different political thought. This has been dividing our country in a way that I haven't seen in my studies. So except for the Civil War, pretty much. And so as we come in this moment, I mean, I was watching Muslims put on registries. And back then, that was enough for me to be panicked in a way that a lot of people weren't, because I have family that died in the Holocaust, too. And so when you see this kind of stuff happening, you see tiki torches, and you see your friends crying, and you watch people can't breathe, and the Tatiana Jefferson is a huge pain. I went down to walk with the family, and I was appalled that there was no police presence, no government official. It was just mm-hmm. activists, you know. And that really hurt to see. But mainly I'm upset about my sons. I call and I am here to stand for them because the GOP in Fort Worth held me involuntarily and interrogated me. They asked me two questions. They asked me if I was going to bring down the FBI and if I was going to take out Trump. So they tried to project on me violence when I am a student of MLK and a Christian. And I'm a Texan and a Democrat. And I'm an activist. And the appalling moment that you realize somebody is projecting on you that you are a threat when you are not a threat is a hard moment. But the worst was when they told me that they took my rights away from my children and they threatened me to get off Facebook, stop talking about politics. They tried to make me out to be a manic, insane woman, just like they did to the suffragettes, which luckily I studied. So when they did it, it was a pattern. Thank God. You know, my heart breaks for the people in those situations that didn't have the opportunity to study the suffragettes. They didn't have the opportunity to study civil rights, and they wouldn't have picked up the patterns of the abuse. And perhaps the abusers would have won, you know. But instead of believing the gaslighting and believing that I'm crazy and believing what a bunch of people who are on an opposite political spectrum than me are calling me, I believed in myself and my sons and my husband, and we have survived a nightmare. My sons were came at midnight, ripped them out like a terror, like what I read in the books, in the history books that I wanted to teach children so that we could protect our country from such violence. And so my sons were terrorized, and now they're scared. I go on marches. I went to see Beto and Barbara in Austin. Thank you, heaven, for that. And as I'm there, I take my sons and I have to tell them, you're safe. You know, you're in a safe place. This place is safe. Most cops aren't bad like you saw. You know, they met really bad people working for the government, and they have watched me try to get justice for 4 years, and they have watched the police treat me with disrespect every time I try. They will talk down to me, laugh at me even. I'm sorry, Sam.
Tell you what, Let me ask you a couple of questions, because you commented on a post that I made about the show.
Yes.
I want to know, where did this happen, in Fort Worth?
Yes, it happened in Tarrant County. It was basically, it started with a little bit of a disturbance. Nothing escalated. You could have, if a good police officer showed up, he could have de-escalated the situation with no trauma. But when you have someone show up who's mean, who shows up and tells you, like, I don't care about you, I don't like your attitude. You know, when you're being with your attitude after you get assaulted and doesn't like how you're acting, it is a terror, you know? So when you meet someone that cold and that calculated and they're wearing a badge, you could think, you know, that person has power over me. But that person is just another person who is a bully, and it's just a bully. You know, you take the badge off of the bully.
Okay, so let me be clear. This happened in the city of Fort Worth?
Yes, Tarrant County Sheriff's Department.
Okay,
yes.
So it was the Tarrant County Sheriff's Department that did it. Oh, wow. Okay, and so I understood in your post, not only did they arrest you, they took you to a mental hospital.
They did not ever arrest me. Deputy said he was taking me to JPS because he did not like my attitude. And when I asked him why he would show my son that when a man physically is aggressive with me, that when I call 911, that the deputy doesn't like my attitude, why would he show my son that? And he said he didn't care about any of you people. And the horror of that is that he looks like me. He's just a nihilist. It's beyond racism in a way that is very terrifying when you meet it.
Mm-hmm.
But just a lack of any care for humanity. And when you meet someone like that who's wearing a badge, it's terrifying. We watched it with George Floyd. It doesn't mean that most cops are this way. Most humans are not this way. So it would be irrational to think most cops are. But at the same time, when you keep going in to get justice and they keep covering up for someone that cruel, the whole system becomes cruel.
Okay, so they never put you under arrest, but they took you without your consent to JPS.
Yes.
And then
yes.
they
held me
the
involuntarily.
Okay.
Right. And they held me involuntarily. They denied my plea for counsel. They interrogated me, and I grabbed, like, the nicest-looking woman who worked there just to sit in there with me because they wouldn't give me a lawyer. And so when I sat in there, they had a police officer interrogate me alone about if I had intent on planning horror, which I don't. I said I wish that Trump was I remember answering when they said, do you want to take Trump out? I said, no, I wish he would be impeached, which ironically he was impeached twice. So, mm-hmm. like, just the way they were projecting to try to make me violent, to try to make me into a threat when I'm not, like, it's a form of gaslighting that abusers do. And so
right.
to watch the police abusing me, like, and you're like, oh, my God, I thought you were supposed to be helping me catch bad guys. Like, I'm a good guy. You know, it's very shattering.
Sure. So while you're in JPS, have they got you in the mental ward of JPS?
Yes, and it's actually quite terrifying because I'm not actually incapacitated. So I'm actually just witnessing how mental patients are being treated, which was unacceptable. And then I got transferred by a deputy who, in the car ride to Sundance Behavioral, threatened me and said to leave politics alone. And when I got taken to Sundance Behavioral, they were horrible there. And when I told people, they said I was crazy. And now mm-hmm. Sundance Behavioral has been closed down after horrors that happened 2 years after I was telling everybody what was happening. So I even had to witness places not being shut down that were terrible. And going to the police and asking for help and them telling me, you're crazy. They're not crazy. They're great. And then now seeing them get closed down, face criminal charges, it has been validating to see that part. But my son still got kidnapped and held for 5 months in Hawaii, and no one seems to even care that they did that to them.
Wow. Okay. I want to make one more point that you made on the post. You said that they gave you drugs against your will.
They did drug me in the JPS and the behavioral place, yes. And they also made me, when I went to CPS, they gave me a lawyer because I didn't have the money for one. And the lawyer said, mm-hmm. hey, if you fight this, they're going to keep your kids longer. So what do you do? You don't fight. You do whatever they say so you can get your kids home. Like, they used the same kind of tactics that they were doing on the border. It felt very much the same. I was with Standing Rock. I'm also related to Choctaw and Shawnee. Like, I understand that there's a MAGA element here, you know?
There's so much going on in this city that is not right. I mean, listen, we could write a book about it. It's insane.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having the courage to call in and tell your story tonight. Last question. Have you
Thank
had a
you
chance
for
to call
hearing me?
Huh? Oh, no problem.
Yeah. Thank
did
you for hearing me.
Did you speak with the sheriff and tell them your problem?
I called them right away, and I actually went to Austin because it was a sanctuary city. I took my children, and I called, and I said, you know, this is what's happening. I'm getting abused. And the sheriff's department said to file an internal investigation, which I did back then. And then they called me and said I was wrong, of course. And then I went up there recently and talked to a sergeant, and he told me they were not going to reopen the investigation. So they just won't reopen it. They said that man resigned, and that's enough. Like, just him resigning, even though he caused hell in my children's lives, and we all have PTSD, we have to go to therapy. You know, my kids are scared if they hear a knock on the door sometimes. I couldn't sleep. Night terrors. You know, they just say, like, oh, he resigned. You should get over it. The lack of empathy for the trauma my sons have suffered and the trauma I have suffered and my husband has suffered is beyond fathomable.
This is crazy. Wow. Thank you so much for telling your story tonight. I was hoping she'd call in, y'all. She told the story on Facebook, and I thought, you know what, this is a story that everybody absolutely needs to hear, and it's one that definitely you couldn't have gotten told in the 3 minutes that they allot us when we go before council. So thank you again for calling in tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night. God bless.
Good night. What a story, y'all. Wow. We're going to go back to the phone lines, 817-446. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 817-446. Good evening.
Carrie, is that me?
It is
okay.
You.
Yeah, all right. Hey, you got a great show, and you got a great topic there. I'm going to steal that, what people thought after speaking at council. Well, that's very good, Carrie. I like that very much, the contact the people and get their opinions and that. So. And to step back to that just a little bit there, I was there at council too, hearing people speaking at. And seeing our new council, I was really, really disappointing. I mean, it was embarrassing. We spent 30 mm-hmm. minutes listening to these council members tell us mm-hmm. about their vacation and like they're superstars or some kind of celebrities or something like that for 30 minutes. And here's the real problem, and what I'm getting people, asking people to help us support to do, to call Maddie and demand of this, and it's what council should do on their own. Move the public presentation from the bottom of the agenda to the top. Take the council's presentation, move it to the bottom. Then if they want to show pictures of them partying or Disneyland, fine. They can show them all night long. We're through. We're out of there. And if anybody wants to stay and watch them, grand. If not, I don't care. But put us on top and put council back on bond. And like you said, there's no shortage of issues in the city. But one thing would help start the power of fixing any of them would be to do this, and this would be the most easiest thing for council to do, but it's got to be the most hardest thing for us to do unless I can get a lot of people to rally to do this. And it should be done on merit alone. But anyway, I appreciate you for having me on there, Carrie, and I'm enjoying your show. And if I can, right? Okay, I'm sorry. If I got just a bit more here, I'm going to plug our show for Monday night. We do the local voter education program, which is if you don't like the ideal, it came from Carrie, and if you do like the ideal, it came from me. No, I'm sorry, but anyway. But also, Monday night is we're normally on Sunday night, and I do the 8 and 9 slot Sunday night, and trying to figure out what the best time to put a program like this out. You know, so many times to choose from to think about, and it hit me. I said, just ask Google. So they tell me when, and they said that's prime time. So we're there normally. But we're going to move to Monday night to accommodate, because we've got the assistant city manager coming on to take questions about the bond and redistricting. Now, I'd like to get him on again in about 4 or 5 months, take questions about some other issues, and keep having him come on and address these issues as we go along. First thing, if anybody's listening or anybody does, on my website, fwdistrict5.com, and that's how you can find it. And I'd like for people to call at least and thank the assistant city manager for coming on, because that is a big thing. I'm sorry, Carrie, did you have something you want to cut in on me and say?
We got to move on, but okay. Wrap it up. We gotta go.
Okay. I didn't
but
mean
no,
to take up so much time.
Go ahead and plug your show for Monday night.
But the show Monday night, City Manager's Zone. I've got some really hard questions I've been asking the city for over 4 years. It will not respond. Now we've got someone that's going to come on and take the questions, and I'm really proud he's doing that on Monday night. So, and there's some questions about this bond and redistricting time, something we need to know about. And if anybody will support us moving that presentation from the bottom to the top, that's our main key there. Anyway, Carrie, I appreciate it. So go ahead and put me on mute, and I'm going to listen in, okay? And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you. That was quite a little bit, y'all. Thomas, so you've heard some of the callers tonight. We got issues in this city, major issues in this city. Did I lose Thomas?
No. Oh, no, I'm here. I'm waiting my turn.
Okay, I'm sorry. Listen, yeah, the callers came in. I'm sorry. So, Thomas, we got major issues.
That's all right.
Right,
and, you know, nearly everyone we just heard from is reflecting their unique version of the core issue, which is the respect dynamic. And mm-hmm. I mean, every person points are valid. And what's interesting is yes, it's important that the public comment move a lot closer to the beginning of the meeting. And yes, we need to have a reasonable amount of time to express our views, whether it's the general public comment or on a specific agenda item. One of the things that I heard from Jackie Cox is that by law, the city's not even following law or common procedures that other governmental entities follow. For example, every one of us on this show tonight has a right to speak on each agenda item if we have input on that agenda item. When we heard Jackie, she was talking about sewer line bonds and funding, tasers for the Marshals Service, and she had a third issue that she wanted to address. Well, the city somehow construed that she only got 3 minutes total and wasn't allowed to speak standalone on every issue. Well, that's nonsense. And that goes for nearly anyone, Mr. Bowen or anyone, is that they look at the presentations as if it's a necessary evil or a chore. And the reality is there's real benefits to moving the public comments or input on agenda items as close to the beginning as possible. I'll give you a couple examples. Show some love for city staff. They make city staffers work all day, which I understand it's their responsibility, and then wait an hour, hour and a half to be available for one line item, for one budget vote, in case someone needs some information from them. And the truth is that, you know, there's real business that could, on those consent agenda items, that could be cleared out pretty quickly. It's also true that many of the public comments, while the city council and the mayor cannot respond, they can be impactful if we give those comments early in the meeting, because it's no coincidence that many of the things that folks have to say are going to be in the mind, planted by a seed in the council members on the subjects that they can discuss or talk about. And so they're totally eliminating the opportunity for people to give input that may be relevant that night and not just kind of a venting sort of at the very end kind of thing. One of the things I wanted to say specifically is it's really interesting. I spent a lot of time with the Marshals Service as I go in and out of the building, and part of my study of people having easy access and being welcome and the dynamic of who's the public servant and who's supposed to be in charge. The city marshals didn't ask for tasers, not all of them. The thing that all of us would probably see, they'd rather have body cameras, which makes sense for everybody pretty much. And the city marshals are part and parcel to the problem, not necessarily their fault, but I started from the cradle to the grave. I literally looked at what it's like to walk in the door to go to a city council meeting and the experience you have going through the line. And I realized that both with the way the marshals handle the checkpoint and the way they conduct themselves in the city council, that is an example of systemic and structural oppression. Like, by default, it makes the speaker feel like they're not welcome there, like that there's that gun and that badge just 6 feet away. So, you know, you better stay within your time frame, and you better not be too critical of the police. There's a lot of that element that you know, people are missing. And the other night when Jackie Cox called in, she had signed up to speak on each of the issues with input that she had researched that she wanted to give input on. And the city staff told her some version of, well, you only get 3 minutes total, so you figure out which minutes you want to use for which subject. That's not how it works. And the truth is the mayor has a lot of discretion on the agenda items. It's important that there be some time limit on the general comments, you know, that aren't part of an agenda item. I get it. We can't stay there forever. But but energetically, the council members are tired. The staff people are tired. So when they get to us little folks, just the people that pay all the bills and care about some of these subjects we're passionate about, they're not in a place where they're ready to hear, you know, especially controversial speech. And that's the tough thing about all that is, you know, it's kind of one of those, you know, that the worst tasting medicine or pill that you might have to take, you put it off, you put it off. And the reality is, you know, clear the air of all the things that folks have to say that night as early on as the law allows. and then get into the, you know, the boring, repeated, regular stuff. Because a lot of those land and zoning issues, while they're important to the parties that are involved in the transaction, most of the viewers, most of the audience, most of the public comment people, they have the option to leave and go home or get back to their families or whatever. And that's the thing. And this is all tied to the perception that they're like royalty now, like the one gentleman said. I mean, Mr. Willoughby, he's been going there for quite a while, but he's right. The dynamics is upside down, and the physical space says that. They sit higher than we do. You have to look up to them. They're looking down on us. They have completely forgotten once they get elected that they work for us. And the city staff is kind of a mixed bag. Obviously, most of us agree that law enforcement has completely forgotten that they work for us. But some of the city staff and departments are very good about recognizing immediately not only that they have to follow the law, but the dynamic that they're on our payroll and that we're the bosses. I can praise some city departments for that for sure.
You made a good point, though. If you go, you know, they give you the buzzer at 2.5 minutes to let you know you got 30 seconds to go. And then if you continue past the 3-minute mark, then, as you said, the marshals close in on you. You know, and
yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's very intimidating.
I mean, and even if you're an experienced speaker like I am, and some of the people are very good speakers, it's the combination of things. You walk up there and you know you only have 3 minutes. You don't have a whole lot of, like, visual eye contact or line of sight. Sometimes council members, especially past city council, they get up and go to the bathroom because they don't want to hear from you, or they get on their phone and ignore you. And some of it is a purposeful act. That's not cool, first of all. But the other thing is you get lights, you get buzzers, you get two people with guns and badges moving your direction, and soon equipped with tasers. I mean, you know, it is designed to discourage open speech and public comment. It doesn't matter what they say. Everything that they do to create a less welcoming space is by de facto the design of it. I mean, you're never going to admit to that, but that is what it is.
But see, technically, you know, as I mentioned, the new leadership downtown, we voted for change downtown. And so now
right.
that we have 6 new people downtown, we expected to see something different. And it was very hard to watch. On the 3rd, it looked very much like the same old, business as usual. Nothing seemed to change with the flow or the attitudes or anything. And I'm just like, I'm so shocked.
Well, here's what happened.
Because
on one hand, we want the city council members to be professional and cordial and respectful to each other. All of us know that they're across the spectrum. Some of them are really conservative. Some of them are a little disconnected about what it's like for other folks in the city. And some of them are fresh faces that are progressive or liberal or moderate. But what happens immediately is, and why the cycle by the city manager is designed this way, is Maddie Parker and the city manager get together and they plotted the first few weeks after the election and the runoff to spend time so that the council members could bond. There's nothing wrong with that. There's a bunch of children and families on the council now, but it moves one step further pretty quickly. They become so collegial and so familiar with each other that their friendships and bonds make them forget themselves and what's really important, for why they were sent there in the first place.
I'm going to make a point real quick. We lost Jackie Cox on the line, and I hope she calls back in. I apologize. I don't think Ms. Cox understood we're going to take some callers tonight, and I apologize.
Yeah, Carrie, I like talking on it, too. I like to comment on it too, Carrie.
Say what?
I love the comment on that. I love the comment on with the new city council members coming in. I believe that they're they try to get in, fit in where they fit in and stuff like that. But you remember, you got the old city council. You still got previous city council members sitting on there, like Jenny Bivens, Moon, and Carlos. Carlos, but
yes,
you got them three still coming in. You still got them three So the new film came up, they lost and found and trying to find their way out there. So I believe they have no choice but to get in and fit in with the crew.
I think that's the human nature factor. But I also think that if you're not mindful that things don't always have to be done the way they always have to be done. I mean, they get an orientation and they're handed this huge manual about process and procedure. And most of the process and procedure is the culture that already existed. It's not like state law. It's not set in stone. So almost every, and because they surrender a lot of that to the mayor, you know, the conduct of the meeting, the prioritizing things, and the mayor historically works so closely with the city manager. The city manager is the person that is steering the ship and keeping on the same course that it's always been on. And that
I believe he runs the show. I don't believe the mayor Parker runs the show. I believe he runs the show. Whole entire thing.
Well, you're right, except that if these particular individuals, so the way it's structured is the mayor is often interfacing with the city manager. The city manager in this type of structure has lots of power day to day. He's like the CEO of a corporation. And the mayor's like the chairman of the board, and the board is the other council members. But in this case, those two individuals, Maddie Parker and David Cook, the city manager, they're like-minded about things. I mean, in many ways, Maddie Parker is a lot like Betsy Price. So for them, they're trying to craft as much business as usual as possible.
See, that's scary. Let me tell you something I saw on Tuesday that concerned me. And I hate that we lost Ms. Cox on the phone. Please, Ms. Cox, call back in. One thing she did, she made a very legitimate point on the issue she called in about. And after she made such a legitimate point, they still went ahead with the vote, and not one council member stood up and said, I didn't see one council member stand up and say, I want to know more about what she's talking about before I make this vote. Not one.
Yeah. Yeah, made a motion. They didn't delay the vote for 2 weeks, which is an option. It was a complete railroad. And, you know, I mean, with all the social issues and equity issues and lots of things in a big, complex city like ours, I think that we're sitting on a ticking bomb. And that is, you know, like Mr. Bowen points out and Mr. Smith, James Smith, and lots of folks, we don't just need that justice system to keep moving and resolve the Tatiana Jefferson thing, but the culture that happens inside the city council, therefore that happens in the police department, has to change as rapidly as possible, because no matter what the outcome of the trial is, if these folks aren't prepared to accommodate some pretty passionate or angry people, no matter what the outcome is, then they haven't set up a system that's going to survive or become healthier. That's the biggest headache of all of these things is, what are you doing differently? Like, what is the police department doing differently so that there aren't other tragedies? What have you done, not just for a consequence for the officer, Aaron Dean, but what is the whole organization doing to make our city safer and more trusting or less distrustful of the police? Because what it looks like, all this messaging of, you know, we don't care and you don't matter that much kind of thing, to me it looks like it's a disposability thing, like a Tatiana Jefferson is just collateral damage. Like they, you know, we're going to have to cut a check because we're liable, but we're not going to do anything to avoid it the next time. That's the posture that I stand.
One thing I'm going to say about what they're doing in this city, and they're absolutely dead wrong. The last time they protested about the Tatiana Jefferson situation, they did it at traffic hour. James Smith can tell you more about it. But then the next thing you know, the next time Aaron Dean had a hearing, his attorney asked for the video cameras the exact route that the protesters had taken. Now, why would Dean's attorney need the city cameras that was on the exact route at the exact time that the protesters had protested? That's intimidation. And it was almost as though to say, you know, we're going to retaliate because you're protesting against a wrong that was done in the city. What kind of message is that saying to the people of Fort Worth?
They don't care. They don't care. They don't care at all.
I have a bunch of open public record requests in on the 3 or 4 days before the 7th Street Bridge incident and 3 or 4 days afterwards, all the communications mm-hmm. that surround that. And the reason mm-hmm. why I did that, by the way, I haven't gotten anything yet. The police department is still studying it and they haven't followed the law or the attorney general's law or anything. But what it looks like to me is that it was premeditated to stop the group on the bridge and hold them indefinitely. And I believe that whether we ever find out that factually, that is like a preemptive detainment of a group of people that were peacefully protesting. But the BS or gaslighting or whatever you want to call it, that they might have crossed the bridge and might have entered businesses is not a constitutionally rational reason to detain people preliminarily. And what I think someday we're going to find out is that the tear gas and the flashbang grenades were something that was discussed and prepared as a probability or potentiality a day or two in advance. And there's a reason why I say that. Yeah. And so it isn't a coincidence that Vance Keyes, and if you don't know who Vance Keyes is, it's pretty significant what his – right. And so Vance Keyes
ran for sheriff,
right? But he's also the guy who told the truth in the Jackie Craig case and released the video. Okay, it gets worse. So Vance Keyes is the tactical and de-escalation advisor. His rank is captain, but he's still paid at his higher pay. Under any other circumstance, if there was a riot or a disruption or a violent protest, normally they would call or have Vance on site to consult whether he recommends using, you know, a higher use of force, like a, you know, a use of force protocol. Instead, Vance was instructed verbally to take a couple days off. And so that means that
so
there are parties.
Is he employed by the city of Fort Worth? Is he still employed by the city of Fort, the police department? Is he still employed by them?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Well, I can tell you that he told me that personally, that that's exactly what happened. I mean, I've requested the communications between him and the supervisor, between Chief mm-hmm. Krause and then Mayor Betsy Price. And there's a unit that the city has funded that most people never heard of, and they generate surveillance and intelligence. They're really only tasked to do it inside the city limits, but they're working way outside of their jurisdiction with other jurisdictions on all kinds of stuff. It's called the Fort Worth Intelligence Exchange. So
you know what,
and my point is that
– go ahead.
I mean, so what's incredible about all this is that what happened on that bridge it's doubtful that what the police claim afterwards, that there were frozen bottles of ice water and there was a number of them thrown at the police. I believe it was time to do what they did. And it may have been they had an instigator throw those bottles because the drone photos show that there were only down to about 66 individuals left on the bridge. Many marchers, all kinds of marchers. The dang sheriff has marched across the bridge with armed men and nobody stopped them. Environmental groups have marched for their causes across that bridge and down 7th Street without any of this. This was a pre-planned incident, kind of like Mr. Bowen's describing, with an agenda. And like you say, Kerry, the video footage will be very useful if Aaron Dean's attorneys are allowed to use it. I mean, it's pretty disheartening.
I know the people, or I know Donnell Ballard, who organized the protest downtown during that time. And I spoke with him after that situation on 7th Street Bridge. And what I understand is he thought, this is according to him, that they were not going anywhere near 7th Street. And the other person was Carol Lafayette Harrison, and she was also, I guess you kind of saw, you can say, co-heading up that protest. And it was her direction to the group, to let's go across the bridge. But I understand Donnell Ballard decided not to go and was taken home, and Carol Lafayette and some of the others went across the bridge. So it's very ironic that you say maybe it was planned. I don't know. Because Mr. Ballard,
brother,
who was
it sounded sound like it was. It sounded like it was.
I mean, the Fort Worth police hadn't used tear gas in 33 years. So one of the things I did is I requested the vacation and leave time for Vance and for David Cook and for Chief Krause to see if they were gone on those days. And I mean, I have those records, but my point is what I verified is that none of the four people, including Vance Keys, took any leave days 2 days before or 2 days after or the day of the bridge incident. So there's no so they're all available is the first point. And the second thing about that is that so then I requested further communications crossways between all of them. The police department hasn't produced that yet, and they sent a request to the attorney general to see if they have to release it. I mean, this may be nothing, if you don't need tear gas for 33 years and then all of a sudden you use it for something that wasn't escalated by the crowd, it looks like you're a little bit escalating. You literally told the only specialist. I mean, Vance Keys has the most training in the police department on de-escalation and mitigating, you know, situations, and you told him to stay away from it and don't answer his phone. And so because they know. I mean, they know he's a good guy and that he's going to tell the truth. I mean, I don't know if that guy's going to risk his career again, but they didn't want to take any chances. So the reason why I brought this up is because the more that I started exploring City Hall and the Marshal Service, the more the police investigated me. And so I did one public record request for the cameras inside City Hall when you enter on city council meeting nights. Instead of sending me what I wanted, they found out who I was, found out what I looked like, and then sent me a 5-minute clip of me going through security. They asked for an hour and 15 minutes. So what they did is basically say, yeah, we see you, and we know what you look like, Mr. Torlin Cassidy, so we're going to give you what we think you're entitled to and not what you requested under the law. And so now I finally got the hour and 15 minutes, but they wouldn't give it to me until they took the video and my open public record request and send it to the Special Investigations Unit over there at the Bob Boland Justice Center. So then when I found out that there was a unit called – yeah.
I've been telling them for a long time how it's grass. So you are making so clear just the story that I've been telling them for a while. It happens, y'all. Fort Worth PD has some crazy people on that force. Since you said that the phone lines have lit up, let's go back to the phone lines and see why they lit up after you made the comment about the bridge. We're going to go to 972-987.
Hey, Carrie, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So first and foremost, Carrie, I want to speak on something regarding a new council. I would just like to say, I just want to remind people that although we have new council members, you have to also remember the people that were before them and the people that still occupy those seats now sit where they sit. So my I look at things like this. Reading, writing, and arithmetic. Mainly, forget arithmetic. We can include that. Reading, writing, arithmetic, and then comprehension. We have adults that sit on that council. So, and I say that to say this. They're gonna have to learn it just like everybody else. I know the people that occupy them seats still kind of can have a sway. But at the end of the day, they were where you were at one point in time. And I don't feel like that the new council needs to be swayed in any way. If you're getting it, as long as you're getting the same information and you're reading over it, that'll determine which direction you want to go as far as when you decide to vote on something, you know. And they say, well, because, you know, during the council meeting, that's when they vote on everything. But during that council session, you got all this information in front of you. You can always say, hey, well, this is how, you know, I'm gonna give me some time to look over this. I'm going to look over this. Come council meeting, you don't always have to vote yes for everything because that's just the thing to do. You can always say, let's do a continuation. You know, let's give me more time. I need to look more into this. That's the power a lot of them need to consider exercising. They are adults, and they can comprehend. I did not appreciate, and I did send him a message directly. I did not appreciate how Maddie Parker did what she did with, and we talked about this, Carrie, how she did what she did with Chris. When Chris decided, hey, he told her, God, nah, you know what, because I don't have I don't have no reason to give you this. You know, you want this, but, hey, I'm going to vote it down because nobody has really got to find out what's going on. And then the guy kind of came back with hey, I got this. It should have been end of discussion. No, my mind is already made up. I'm going to vote it down. Then she'd be like, well, Chris, it's your decision. He was kind of like, you know, he was in that moment of pause and like, you know, like, yeah, I will give a continuation. There's no knock on him. But
No, I heard Maddie Parker say, Chris, maybe, no, she said, Chris, you have the option to continue this if you want to, as though she was kind of guiding him a little bit.
I don't disagree with you. Yeah, I heard the same thing, but it's like when that was thrown at him, his mind was kind of, I told him, hey, you can't have fear of getting it right or getting it wrong. You're going to make all your decisions are not going to be what people want. You just got to make a decision that you can be sure you'll be right with. And another thing, Carrie, you mentioned the overpayment of the fire department. You know what I said about that? That's basically corruption. Let me call it what it is. That's corruption, Maddie Parker. That's corruption. Call it what it is. And that's you guys endorsed me, so, oh, well. That's basically what that is. Y'all gave me an endorsement. There's an overpayment. Oh, well, they are firefighters. Nobody's gonna pay that no mind. They know Maddie Parker. That's corruption. Because had it been anyone else, I'm sure they would have found a way to say, make them people recoup that. They would have recouped that, you know? So.
Well, let's be clear on what we're talking about so everybody understands. In the last pre-council session, there was some discussion about some Fort Worth firefighters, like over 100, that got overpayment. And so it was discussed that they should be asked to repay that money. And Maddie Parker stated that she didn't think that the firefighters should pay the money back. And I feel like this. If she wants to pay it out of her pocket, it's fine, but I don't think she can speak for the rest of us that we feel like it's okay that they have extra money. If I normally make $800 a week and this week I get $1,000 on my check and nobody's told me I got a raise, then my conscience should tell me that something went wrong and I should then go to someone an HR and say, does this belong to me or was this a mistake? So if they intentionally spent the money, I mean, I'm sorry. They owe the money back. It's just that simple. So we're just going to pay out thousands of dollars to people for no good reason at all. I mean, they do their job. That's why they get a check. So I don't see that they should have gotten an overpayment and they should not be expected to repay it back. That's just me. So to be clear, that's what Adrian is speaking of.
Yeah. Right, hey, Adrian? By the way.
Hey, Carrie, I had a question for Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
Hey, do you believe Chris Nettles is scared to offend his counterparts down there, like scared to offend them, like vote with them or vote against them? If you vote against them, they're not going to like them or anything like that. Do you sense that?
No, I go on the record and say, honestly, no. I had an opportunity, and I've shared it with Kerry. I had an opportunity of, before Chris even took on this, you know, because he's been in a political arena for the last, you know, he's been one of the most consistent the last several years, kind of, you know, with his first mayoral
mayor,
run.
I mean, he ran for mayor before.
Yeah. He ran for mayor, then he ran for council, then he just did it again. So I actually had an opportunity to work with him through a youth organization that I'm with. So I actually got to work with him. We coached together. So I got to understand. That was my first time getting a feeling, understanding of him. I would say no. Him being a man of God, truly, I say truly, him being a man of God, I don't think he's fearful. I just think that because he's like a lightning rod right now, I think it's people that's probably trying to pull him, trying to quarrel him, you know, trying to. I don't think he's fearful,
no,
or I don't think he. But I think it's some people that's trying to.
Jenna Bivens.
Go ahead, sir.
I'm not gonna say number. I believe one of them, Jenna Bivens, or people who've been there before her, before them, the same people got reelected. I believe they. Mm-hmm. I believe they're trying to sway him a certain way. That's my opinion.
Yeah, just like you say, basically like saying like this is not how we do it. This is how we do it, you know.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
yes.
You know, we don't know what kind of phone calls they get. We don't know what kind of emails they get. So he does have to be careful. He has to be, the Bible tells us be wise as a serpent, harmless as a dove. So those two attributes he would have to utilize, but he got to remember who put him there, because they have an expectation of him for putting him there. You know what I'm saying? So he's there now. He's doing a job. But I can understand what you're saying. Yeah, I can understand what you're saying on your part.
Hey, I was going to point out one thing that I'd observed by interviewing, you know, kind of off-the-record employees, the employee pool. So a lot of the things we're talking about, this is one of those unintended consequences. The morale of employees that are not firefighters and not police department is always impacted when stuff like this happens. I mean, not just the pay scale or benefits or whatever, but – When someone like Maddie Parker is beholden to the Police Officer Association and the Firefighter Association, they all the other employees tend to think they're getting the short end of the stick. And first of all, I think there's labor law that dictates that the firefighters can't be overpaid without that being cleaned up. I mean, not just the ethics and, you know, the practical part of it, because it costs us a lot of money as taxpayers, but everything that you see connected to city council meeting, but even these kinds of things, right down there to being a police photographer only for the police, everyone else that works in, it doesn't matter if they work in the water department, the parks and rec, you know, the city secretary's office, or any of those other departments, IT, you name it, they notice that the first responders are like the blessed, you know, ones that get all the extras, and that carries over to budget and all kinds of things, and so I mean, the politics of the politics internally, like the one gentleman mentioned, I mean, Chris Nettles has got to find his way. You don't know who's coming in from how many different directions. I think that's true for Mr. Williams and their admins. Also, one of the things that makes it tough, each council member has an admin that's paid two or three times what the council members paid. Think about that. And technically, some of these folks have been in the position working for one council member or another, and their loyalty is closer to the city manager than it is to the council member that they work for.
Wow.
I mean, their pay raise and their bonus comes from the city manager, not from their council member. And, you know, on one hand, you know, I'll give you an example. Elizabeth Beck chose to hire the same admin that Ann Zeta had. So she's competent. She knows how the insider works. But on the other hand, she's used to doing it the way it's always been done. And then if you get an admin that's an outsider, like Jared Williams, you know, young, smart, dynamic, he's got a whole lot of catching up and learning to do. And it's easy for him and the city to be manipulated or distracted by the city manager and the admins that have 10 and 20 years in the city hall. I mean, there's always palace intrigue, but it's been real interesting to notice, including who's bailing. For example, the city secretary retired. So those folks that were trying to run the meeting the other night, I mean, one of them's a longtime veteran of the city secretary's office, but he's never been the city secretary before.
Ronald.
And
I'm
so,
Ronald.
And he doesn't want the job either. And so, whenever there's a vacuum, there's these informal power things. And what I found is, before the meeting on Tuesday nights, and during the meeting, there are about five different entities that all think they're in control of the room. The city manager thinks he's in control of the room. The city secretary's office thinks they're in control of some aspects of the room. The audiovisual guy clearly thinks he's in charge of the room when he's not. The marshal service thinks they're in charge of the room more than just the security of it. And so there's lots of competitive, you know, mindsets that make that whole scene kind of a nightmare, really. I mean, you know, the mayor, no matter who the mayor is supposed to run the meeting, and they take charge of moderating the meeting. But behind the scenes, there's a whole lot of things that gum stuff up. I'm sure that's true in a lot of big cities, but it is why we have, you know, things jacked up as far as the order and the priority of things.
Go ahead.
Is it true that the city manager makes more money than the mayor? Is that true, or just I've seen an article? I don't know.
Like the mayor, I think it's 25 grand, and the city. This our city manager makes $350,000.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And he's not the highest paid.
Go ahead. He's the highest what?
He's the second highest paid government official in Tarrant County. The county administrator at Tarrant County. So the county administrator makes $400,000 a year.
Wow.
Go ahead. So somebody asked me to ask you how to submit, what was the question, asked you how to obtain public records from the Fort Worth Police Department. So they're trying to figure out how are you obtaining all those records through the Fort Worth Police Department or from the Fort
Okay,
Fort
so
Department.
There's a website. And I mean, I can give real detailed advice, but in general, keep this in mind. The rest of the city, there's a form on the same portal or website. You can search like public record requests, Fort Worth, and you'll find a portal. Then you have to sign up. But there's some cautions. The city's form and the police department, which has its own form, does not comply with the state law. Legally, any citizen from anywhere in the country can get information from the city or from the Fort Worth Police Department. You can do it anonymously by law. If you set up an email account that's your email account but doesn't identify who you are, you know, like goodcitizen123@yahoo.com or whatever, you're legally allowed to request information. The problem is the police department asks you all kinds of personal information that they're not entitled to just to get in there and do your thing. And what I think is interesting is they ask to differentiate whether you're a private citizen or media. It's none of their business. And not only that, legally it's none of their business. But it makes you wonder, why are they differentiating? Like, are they going to release information that makes them look good real quick? And are they going to stall or game the system when it's something that might make them look bad? Because I'm telling you that from the first time I did a public information request, they started by trying to find out who the heck I was.
Wow.
Background check, whatever. And I mean, I follow this First Amendment stuff in a bunch of other jurisdictions, and the only reason why they're doing it is because they've gotten away with it so far. The answer is for somebody that doesn't worry about it and wants to start requesting public information, you can go to that portal. Now, I'll tell you one slick thing I think is going to be interesting for all of us. I did an open public records request of all the open public record requests submitted in the last 6 weeks.
Hmm.
And if you think about that, you're actually entitled to that. So what that will reveal is who else is digging in and trying to find stuff. Is the media doing their job, or have there been no requests from the media compared to private citizens? So there may be allies out there that some of us have never met or heard of who might be looking for the same kind of things that you can network with. And I'm hoping that by requesting their requests, which is public record, we can get some of those. So,
That's good.
There's a lot to learn, but yeah. I did a public record request for the Tarrant Regional Water Board because it's real corrupt too. And while I was in the public meeting, we realized that the general manager and the cop that was babysitting me, they have their own police force, and the PR person and J.D. Granger, the son of Kay Granger, were all texting each other about me. So I went to the front desk during the meeting, and I did an open public record request of all their text messages.
Whoa.
Because, if you use your personal phone at work and you discuss something that's work-related, everything that was recorded or on your phone that day, you are entitled to. And I'm talking about if you have photos stored that are inappropriate, by law, they're supposed to surrender that too.
Wow.
And cops do a lot. Cops will take their personal cell phone and take a picture of you to try to intimidate you. And the truth is you get their name and badge number, you can request everything on their phone. They hate it, but it's the truth.
Y'all, that's some good information. We got to go back to the phone lines, y'all. We're going to pick up 817-609. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is James Smith, and I, too, attended the city council meeting on the 3rd, so I thought I'd join the party.
Okay.
Everybody knows that for over a year I've been advocating to have a section of Interstate 35 memorialized in Autauquiana Jefferson's name. Just before the council went on vacation, summer break, whatever they call it, I was assured that that would be on the agenda for the 3rd. Well, as I watched the work session from home on my phone, I watched my councilman wonder what happened to it because it was supposed to have been on the agenda. That bothered me, so I decided I'd come downtown because I really hadn't planned on coming downtown. So what I wanted to know was when was it going to be on the agenda and why wasn't it on the agenda on the 3rd when that's what I was told it was going to be. Well, lo and behold, it's going to be on the agenda on the 10th, and they're going to vote on it on the 17th. So I would like all of your listeners to phone in and support that effort to have Interstate 35 memorialized in Autauquiana Jefferson's name. Now, why it wasn't on the agenda and why my councilman didn't know it wasn't on the agenda, that's another story, another show. But suffice it to say, I'm glad that it's on the agenda officially. I've got the word today. And I'll be down there on the 10th to continue to support this effort.
So how do the people support it? How do you want them to support it?
Well, basically, in the public presence, say you support that a section of that highway be named in Autauquiana Jefferson's name in her memory.
And James,
so
I have a suggestion.
Come to the city council meeting or call in, or what are you saying that they need to do?
Yeah, the city council meeting, call in if they don't want to come down. If they don't want to come and do a citizen presentation, they can just call in.
Okay. So he's saying jam the phone lines, y'all, on the 10th. Jam the phone lines. How do you submit? Tell them how to submit the request to be on the city council. So for those people who don't understand that process.
Well, you have to go on the city page and click on agenda, and it'll have an application for citizen presentation. And you just click on that and inform them of what your subject is. And like Tommy said, let's rumble.
Okay.
I have an idea, James, that might be useful too. I'll be there on Tuesday. There are some folks that are starting to talk about an independent redistricting commission, which might happen in some form, which we all want and need. So there will be speakers talking about that specifically. One way that we can give a lot of credence to James, if you can't speak on more than one subject during public comments, when James Smith gets up to speak, anyone in the council chamber that's sympathetic to his, you know, his ideas and his position, they just have to quietly stand up. In other words, I mean, sure, we want some folks to mention what James is calling for, if they can come and speak.
But even if you can't sign up or you've already got something else you've got to speak about, stand up during his 3 minutes. It's a just a silent, not just respect thing, but it shows people that, you know, it's another message without saying a word, basically.
So I agree.
I think that's a really good way. It's a really good way to show that people have his back and that they're there for – there's so many issues that we have to start calling for. So.
I agree.
Mr. James, is there anything else you want to add to that?
Other than the fact that the new council members are going to need their constituents to have their back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I went down there, because my councilman needed he needed the person he was advocating for to be there to have his back.
That's right. Yeah.
We support you, Chris. I agree. I agree 100%. So if I don't make the council meeting, I definitely will call in my support.
I appreciate it. There are others that were unbeknownst to me that have joined, my effort, and I'm appreciative of all of them that have joined in to make this happen.
Okay. Well, wonderful. Thank you, Mr. James, for calling in tonight.
Oh, yeah. One nice, good show.
Thank you. We're going to go to area code 314-381. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Oh, Gary.
Hi.
I don't even know what y'all were talking about, but somebody mentioned something about a bridge, and I went to look.
We're talking about our city council, and we're talking about our new mayor, and we're talking about how to make certain that they stay on course, since there's six new people up there, and we want them to stay on course and do what they're supposed to do and listen to the people and vote along the lines of what the people want and not what they want. That's what we're talking about tonight. How can we get our council on course? We're trying to fine-tune them right now. How do we fine-tune them where they realize that they need to get their dial set to the will of the people?
Well, I'm going to keep an eye on it. I'm sure you will get reports and see exactly how all that goes down.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're doing tonight. We got our eyes on the city council. We got our eyes on the new mayor. And we're absolutely going to make sure that if we put you all in there, that you all are either going to eventually listen to us, or in 2 years we're going to vote for some new people. You know, somebody was inboxing me today saying, y'all need to remember that you can always recall people. And I thought, well, you know, they don't do stuff like that in Fort Worth. But they were saying that, you know, y'all have to exercise y'all right to recall people, do recall elections if people don't do their jobs. And Thomas,
I was
going to
say that.
Huh?
I was going to say that.
You what?
I was going to mention that about the recall.
Oh.
The council has two or three mandates to at least vote on. Even the folks that are going to vote against what we think is a good idea, they're mandated to take a stand on two or three key issues that are nothing to do with whether the land needs to be commercial or not. For example, independent redistricting commission by citizens is clearly why the council flipped and five new seats were established. Another one is independent citizen oversight committee for the police department. They're never going to vote 9-0 in our favor, but the whole point is that they need to go on the record, and we need it. We prefer it to be 5-4 or 6-3, but my point is that those things should be in the pipeline and should be as timely as possible, as early on for lots of things, the outcome of the Aaron Dean trial, the eventuality that the police are going to make another mistake because they're not changing any of their policies or practices. The fact that the city council will be expanded from 9 members to 11, 2 new seats. The council needs to get in the habit of recognizing that the citizenry wants oversight on important issues like redistricting, police oversight, and probably some other things. And you know, that's something we have to kind of condition them to start hearing so that,
well,
they do their own.
The people still have control over the police anyway. The police is your employees, and you're the employer. You should have a police commission that set rules and regulations and standards on how they interact with the public and do other things.
Yeah.
Person, I'm totally against when I see protests stopping traffic in the middle of the bridge when you could be walking on the pedestrian side. Because now what you're doing, basically unlawfully detaining other people who don't want to have anything to do otherwise with the issues, probably don't even deal where they could have a say-so if they do. But that's a two-way street. You got to have compliance with the public, in the public, and also have better oversight over those agencies and departments in which your employees work in.
Yeah.
Good
so
luck with that.
I mean, so the simplest oversight is the very first thing that the core topic tonight is having access to the council just for folks to speak their mind. And so what we have to do is change the cultural idea for the city staffers that have been there for a while and the longtime city council members that Fort Worth citizens want more say in operational government, not less say, want more access, more voice, more transparency. And, they may not like it. I guarantee you the police chief's going to say he doesn't want an independent, police oversight commission. But right now they're just cutting the checks. They're totally ignoring that they haven't changed their training regimen, their culture, their screening process. And so these kind of things keep happening in Fort Worth. And, there's a price tag and the taxpayers have to pay this. Tatiana Jefferson's family is suing, and they should, and they deserve civil justice as well as criminal justice. And, there are lawsuits that are 8 or more years old that haven't been settled. But eventually, because Fort Worth is a self-insuring city, us taxpayers are going to have to pay those settlements. And that's part of what ought to motivate even the conservative members of the city council to stop wasting money on those things because stop doing what you've always done.
Let's talk about one more thing, and we're gonna go back to the phone lines again. The CCPD funding that comes out of the Fort Worth Police Department, we know that the Fort Worth Police Department gets 80% of the budget, okay? So they get 80%, and a portion of that 80% they give to CCPD funding. That particular fund is causing such a rift in the black community because a lot of people feel that the wrong people are getting the money and that their programs are not being effective in stopping crime or mending the fences between the police department and the community. And so the question is, we're not, as the citizens, that is, we're not being allowed to speak candidly to these people about issues concerning the money that they're spending, our money that they're spending. Because if you're taking money and you're giving it out at $35,000, $50,000, $100,000, $300,000 a walk, and these programs are not effective, but you're cherry picking who you're giving it to so that some people are saying they're giving it to the people who stitch. I don't know, but that's what I'm hearing. So that said, we really got to get somebody to start, watching the purse because it seems like this city has, all of this excess spending, all of this fat in the budget, and nobody cares that we are the taxpayers and we're the ones that's footing the bill. And that's
right.
Something that's crazy. I've reached out to – let me finish with this point. I reached out to the police department, and I asked them, can y'all send me a spokesperson to come on the show? So if y'all listen, I'm calling you out. I asked for a spokesperson to come on the program and explain the whole breakdown of the CCPD funding, who's getting it, what type programs are passing the sniff test, and why are other programs not. And I'm understanding one criteria is that you have to have a nonprofit. So if you don't have a nonprofit or go under somebody else's nonprofit, you're automatically disqualified, regardless of how creative your idea may be, no matter how effective your idea may be. If you're not a nonprofit, it does not get the funding. So Thomas, do you know much about the CCPD funding?
Well, I know a little bit, and one of the things that people miss is before the CCPD funding ever existed, the city already had a budget for the police department. So I don't know what the current number budget number is, but appreciate that lump of money is parallel to what most cities spend and dedicate to the police department. Cities like ours that have that surtax, basically, sales tax surtax, that's called CCPD money, it's like a transit tax, but the money is dedicated to the police. So this is like supercharging the police department with I think the annual funds are like 20% bonus money for the police department. And then that's split 80-20 like you described, Carrie. So 80% of the money, the staff still allocates and spends the way they want to, whether it's on equipment or training or uniforms or a police photographer or nonsense. Then there are community-based grants that's about 20%. The CCPD money is projected to be $88 million a year for 10 years. So the tax has been passed for another 10 years. The thing about that is that adds up to almost $1 billion. That's on top of what the city would normally spend on the police.
That's crazy.
And it's crazy because, you know, the line item things that what they choose to spend it on or don't spend it on, the public has almost no – I mean, technically you can go dig up the budget and look at it, but a lot of it is discretionary funds that, you know, down department people are spending at their discretion. You know, you find out what we spend it on. We don't approve what it's spent on. It's already a done deal. I worry because that's why that thing that's called a fusion center that Fort Worth calls the Fort Worth Intelligence Exchange is so troubling, because how do we know they're not spying on us? I mean, I don't want to sound like a big paranoid person, but what I'm saying is that other cities don't start their own. But how much money was spent on that? How many officers work in that department? I mean, what's amazing is when you ask line and rank and file officers, they never heard of it. In fact, I did a open public record request on a guy named Lieutenant Jeff Keck, K-E-C-K. At first, they came back, did you spell his name right? I'm like, he's a 22-year veteran of Fort Worth PD. And so that's my point, is that may be a giant black box right there, and it may be, you know, $1 million a year. I don't know. But because they're so bloated with money, that's why they can afford a police photographer, for example. You know, a full-time salaried position with benefits that just goes around and takes pictures of police in their dress uniforms. That's just
wow, crazy. That's crazy.
That's
crazy.
Okay, Kenneth, what do you got to say? Go ahead, Kenneth.
It is crazy. They can be spending that money on other stuff that needs to be prioritized on, not stuff like that. It's crazy. Just waste the money. And tech dollars money as it is, too.
Yeah.
Okay, Adrian wanted to ask another question. Okay, Adrian, you're back on.
Hey, yeah, quick question. Well, it's a quick observation, then I want to ask the question. Is it Tim or Thomas?
Thomas.
Thomas, okay. So quick observation regarding the intimidation. Carrie, you've shared your story. You had the guest come on tonight and share her story. And Thomas just explained, which is a form of intimidation, when he seeks to get public records or this, that, or the other, he shared his story of intimidation. And one observation that stood out to me, where I think all it stems from. Now, you made a good, valid point, Thomas, regarding we should be, as citizens of Fort Worth, regardless of where I stay in the city, I should be able to speak on any council agenda, regardless if it's in my district. I should be able to speak on anything. But what they do is they made it to where you can only speak on things that's pertaining to your – I might be mistaken. Help me understand if I'm right or wrong. But you only can speak on things that's pertaining to your district. And most of the stuff they push through is things that they don't have opposition to. We had one person in opposition to something, they probably will push it through. But I've seen, and he's no longer there. Thank God, he's good riddance to him. Jerry took his seat. But I've seen when you had a drove opposition against something, how the council members, they're less likely to vote something through if it's in their district, you know. So, but I think the intimidation factor comes in because, for one, your name, your information is before them, your address, this, that, or the other, blah, blah, blah. So if you're somebody who's considered controversial, or somebody who's going to challenge the status quo, or someone, you know, that's going to get people to thinking and questioning things, then remember, your name, your information is there. So basically, you know, police get your, they get your information, you know what I'm saying, and they can say, okay, hey, we're gonna have to kind of send like a message to this individual, you know, kind of. So okay. I think a lot of intimidation comes from that, and that was my point. I'm listening. Thank you. I'm listening.
And I mean, I talked to Carrie in advance about a young man named Philip Turner, who won a case called Turner versus Driver. And if you don't know who he is, he beat the city of Fort Worth and won a settlement of $500,000 plus legal fees. So it cost our city $1 million, but he was right. Okay. And he took it all the way to the Fifth Circuit Court, where he won his appeal. And the point in his is the right to film the police specifically. Okay, so there's lots of around that case that shows you how mucked up the Fort Worth PD is. But but the key thing for that is that Philip Turner proved not only that Fort Worth PD specifically will retaliate, but that historically they've been able to operate above and outside of the law. And, you know, if you don't think it's a big deal, Philip Turner sued Lieutenant Driver and another lieutenant because they were the officers with authority, and the city of Fort Worth and the Fort Worth PD. After the settlement, the city of Fort Worth promoted Lieutenant Driver to captain. And now, here's how you circle everything in together. That Captain Driver is the head of the traffic division. So when they're trying to pass that cruising ordinance on 7th Street, who do you think is going to be supervising the officers that will be profiling drivers? Whether you drive a low rider or whether you're an Uber driver that's a person of color, who do you think is going to be, you know, supervising those officers? The same guy who violated Philip Turner, an African-American man's rights. And so what you have here is white man abuses an African-American's rights. He gets promoted to captain. Black officer that's a chief deputy tells the truth and releases a video, and he gets demoted to captain. And so also Lieutenant Driver has been a lifelong member of the Police Officers Association, and Vance Keyes is not a member of the Police Officers Association. So if you don't think it's a gang or a clique, that's all you need to know about Fort Worth PD right there.
Wow. And y'all think this city ain't got some problems. And
it's corruption.
Say what, Kenneth?
It's corruption at its finest.
Yeah,
the more the spotlight, you know, light is the perfect sanitizer. The more transparency, the more we push for access, the more we expose all the things that we're chasing down, the more we do public information requests and get better at it. So one thing, almost everything I know so far about public information requests, I learned from Philip Turner and his friends. And I mean, his is the most watched, top watched video channel on YouTube. And he's inspired people across the country by teaching each other best practices. They're not all trying to win money and get rich from lawsuits. They're trying to educate the public and then inadvertently educate government and law enforcement to how they do things wrong. I mean, I get that part, but it's frustrating. But I can tell you, if you want to get a quick education on how to handle yourself around the police and how to expose corruption, watch – he calls himself the Batasai, but watch some of Philip Turner's videos. I mean, he's the gold standard on stuff like this. And what he had to get good at was walking into city halls and asking for public record requests. And what's wild about it is he shows – here's an intimidation thing. So at Tarrant County Sheriff's Department, if you want to request a record of anything, an incident that you were involved in, but more importantly, a background record on a deputy or whatever, on their form of their public access form, they put the statute that says a false police report or a false complaint is a felony. Hmm. They put it on there to intimidate you so that you won't file a complaint. And that's not lawful, but they do it. It turns out that jurisdictions across Texas do this as a regular practice. The same's true on the Fort Worth PD site. About four of the things they ask you your address, they ask you your phone number, they ask you your date of birth, so it's really easy for them to run a background check. But not only is that none of their business, they know exactly what they're doing. I mean, the fact that I asked some pretty innocent requests and they turned right around and did a background check before they released the information tells you all you need to know. In fact, one of the requests I made, and I haven't got answered yet, is before the election, did this Fort Worth Intelligence Exchange build a file on Mr. Nettles or Mr. Williams or Elizabeth Beck, or you pick it. In other words, are they preemptively trying to figure out who's who that might end up on the city council? You know, they're running ads against opponents. They're running ads against opponents, right? And the worst thing about that Fusion Center, Fort Worth Intelligence Exchange, is that Lieutenant Keck is networked with Homeland Security, the FBI, the Texas Rangers, the Tarrant County Sheriff's Department, and all the law enforcement agencies inside Tarrant County.
Nobody knows anything about it. We're going to open the phone lines of Adrian one more time. Adrian ran in District 3. And remember, Adrian, that there was one of the candidates, I think her name was Ann Lowe, and she felt like that there was some type of intimidation done toward her, and it kind of quieted her campaign down because she was in fear. What did Ms. Lowe say?
She didn't really, we reached out to her. She just kind of said, just pray for her. She didn't go on specifics about what it was, but
Somebody came to her home and identified themselves
as
a private investigator.
She said, yes. She had said initially when the campaign first started, and she called out. She had called out he's council member now, but she had called out Mike Crane on it. She had called him out on it. And through email exchanges, because we had the city secretary, she called him out on the what did she call him out? She called him out through the email. And this was like where everybody could see it, because you know when the city secretary emailed us, it's like a mass email, so everybody just, if you're gonna respond, you respond, whatever. Well, she had called out Michael Crane on two occasions regarding things that was going on, and that one was that with that private investor, somebody came to her home. And after that, we didn't hear no more from her.
She felt she was so scared. She sent an email to all of the other people in that race telling what
had
happened. Let them know and said that she felt intimidated, you know, and she felt like somebody was was connected to the race and trying to get her to, for whatever reason,
drop out.
Do that. So that's it. Okay, y'all, we're gonna get out of here. I know we're going to get out of here. I do have one more question. We're just going to go over a little bit, y'all. So if you're on the phone lines, if you're listening via the Internet, you have to get on the phone lines real quick, and that's 516-387-1981. You have to jump offline and jump on the phones in order to hear the rest of what we're going to say, because it's straight up 9 o'clock. It's going to cut the Internet off. So, again, if you're listening only via the Internet and you want to finish hearing what we're saying, we only have 90 seconds left, and you'll have to get on the phone lines, and that number's at the top of your screen. One last thing I wanted to touch on was this 2022 bond package. You know, a lot of people are thinking this is not a good idea, that the bond package is not something we should vote on because we're already in the red. That said, what are y'all's thoughts on this 2022 bond package?
Well, I've been hogging time, but I have some input on that. And one of the things that's tough about this bond package with the city is how many dollars are co-payments for projects that they're willing to share with the county or with this Tarrant Regional Water District. So a lot of times, even a savvy accountant can't read the line item and figure out what it really means. There's a whole lot of stormwater runoff and drainage funding in the bond package. And there have been in 1-2 years ago also. And it turns out it's money that TRWD, that corrupt, you know, Panther Island boondoggle is looking for. So basically, they think that the federal, the county, and the city taxpayers should all be, you know, running up bonds, and the money's secretly going for the Panther Island thing. I'm going to give you one quick example. In that mm-hmm. bond package is $25 million for a boat lift, like a canal lock. And mm-hmm. and TRWD has to contribute another $25 million. This is a complete nonsense compared to all – I mean, that would pay for a trunk line for a light rail, for example. So there's $25 million in the city's Fort Worth City bond package that we've identified that goes to lift boats so that they can go from one height in the river to another. Personal private boats.
I want to say something about the bond package. Mm-hmm. I know personally, my company, we're part of the Fort Worth Stockyard Business Association. So JD came to meet, we have like luncheons every month, and JD did a presentation on Panther Island. And I know for sure most of that money gonna go towards Panther Island, and they build a lot of stuff. That don't make no sense, like a river walk and different things like that. So most of that money gonna go towards Panther Island. I know for sure it's gonna go towards Panther Island. Cause I've seen it personally.
He did presentation
on it, stuff like that. Huh?
Is that the thing? Panther Island is in the bond package.
Well,
improving
yeah,
Panther
some
Island. Improving. Yeah, the project is they're gonna build a river walk, build all type of things. They I'm telling you. That bond is gonna be part. That Panther Island project it's huge. It's a big percentage of that bond pack, I believe, because they doing a lot of stuff out of that money. I've seen it personally. Well, he did slides and presentations on it, and most of that bond pack is going to be part of Panther Island project. They built a lot of stuff.
Yeah, people think that like maybe their sewer lines in the old neighborhood are getting fixed or drainage problems, but. But that isn't the case.
Mm-mm.
And the problem is Panther Island and all of their glorious plans will not work unless they get all of the money from all of the organizations. So, you know, it's kind mm-hmm. of a chicken and egg thing. But I'm going to tell you that Kay Granger, that old congresswoman, and her son mm-hmm. who works at Panther Island and at TRWD, they've been promising $400 million in federal dollars for flood control for 20 years. And here's the problem. It's never coming because the Corps of Engineers evaluates where in Texas they'll need flood dollars the most. And everyone knows that the coast has more flood problems than Tarrant County does. Not that we don't maybe need some flood control stuff, but that if they have to choose where to put $400 million, it's going to go to Houston and, you know, Baytown and all those kind of places, not to our project. And if you never get that money, there is no reason for Fort Worth to be investing in bonds to support that project. It's an all or nothing thing. Either everybody has to put in money or it won't work. And there's so much. Look, those three bridges cost $21 million. They're basically overpasses. It took them 7 years to build three overpasses, and the highway department builds overpasses for about $1.5 million in about 18 months. So where'd all the money go? Just a perfect example. If you don't know anything about that, I mean, it goes on and on. The general manager that's leaving is on the front page every day because they secretly promised him a $300,000 bond. J.D. Granger, the congressman's son, is now a glorified events coordinator. He gets paid $252,000 a year, and they promised him a $60,000 bonus. The CFO of the organization, been the CFO for 30 years, she used to sleep with the general manager. And then eventually she stopped that, and then this is not gossip. This is facts. These are in the public records. Then she's the CFO, and her new husband is the bond attorney. So you got two people with legal and financial fiduciary responsibilities who couldn't even testify against each other if one of them committed a crime. So all the bonds associated with the Panther Island project are monitored and managed by this guy. And his wife is managing and proposing the budget every time. And it gets worse. So J.D. Granger is now married to the woman he had an affair with, who was the public information officer or marketing director or whatever for Panther Island. It goes on and on and on. It is, and they have their own private police force. So when I go to speak at the public meeting, I guess on July the 28th, first time I've ever been there,
I'm out in the parking lot, and their private police, they're not really private, they're licensed peace officers, are running my plates. I'm there to attend a public meeting. So what's happened here is the city of Fort Worth, Betsy Price, remember, she's running for county commissioner, and all of those folks, they all made a pact with the devil, and they cannot afford not to keep moving or pretending that Panther Island's going to work. Who makes the money? All those real estate developers are trying to build buildings on top of all that polluted land. I mean, it's the most polluted 400 acres in Texas.
Oh, my God. Y'all, you know what? My mouth is like that emoji on Facebook that has the mouth open and the eyes open. mouth is right now. I mean, this show has been more informative than I could have even imagined. Y'all, listen, we got to do a part two at some point. I want to say first, thank you to my guests that came tonight, Jackie Cox, Thomas Tora Linkazi, and Kenneth Bowen. And I want to say to Jackie Cox, I hope she knows it, I'm going to invite her back. I think I did not explain the complete structure of the show, and she did not understand that we would take callers, so I absolutely want to bring Jackie Cox back at a later time and get her to finish explaining all the things that she was going to tell us tonight. Y'all, we do this each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor to tune in to the show because we put out good information. This is the show where you can trust that you're getting real news here. Listen, you can support us three ways here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. You can tell a friend about us. You can also advertise with us, y'all. Listen, if you got a business and you want the people of Fort Worth to find out about it, advertise with us. That's what I'm going to say, advertise with us. And also, y'all, if y'all like to donate to the show, please feel free to do so. You can do that at PayPal.me/ Let's Talk Fort Worth. Also, y'all, listen, if you have an idea for a show, drop me a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. Listen, we got to get out of here, y'all. We overtime tonight. But I thank all of my guests again. I thank the audience for listening. And we'll see you next week, same time, same bat channel. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.